Welcome to the Preconception Podcast, the only podcast dedicated exclusively to guiding women through the preconception period. Our mission is to make sure you have the information you need in order to have the healthiest pregnancy possible, whether that happens next month or next year. The decisions you make today can significantly impact the health of you and your future children for years to come. So each week on our podcast, we'll discuss one piece of the preconception puzzle. This way, you can enter pregnancy empowered, informed, and in the best health possible. Join us on your journey and have today be the day you start planning your perfect pregnancy. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Preconception Podcast. I'm really excited because today we're going to be talking about a topic that I think often gets overlooked when we're talking about planning for a pregnancy, and that's career planning in the preconception period. And so today we have Corinna Markovich with us coming all the way from Australia. This is our first international podcast, and so I'm really excited about that. And we selected her to come on this podcast because she's one of the only people that I've ever seen talk about pregnancy planning as it relates to your career in the preconception period. And I just thought this was such an important topic that all of you could probably benefit from hearing. So thank you so much for coming on the podcast today, Corinna.
Thank you so much for having me, Christy. I'm thrilled to be here.
So can we start out by just having you tell us a little bit about your background?
Yeah, absolutely. So as you said, my name's Corinna Markovich. I graduated from the University of Adelaide with a Bachelor of Laws and Honours, and went on to practice law for a number of years as a litigator, before then joining the public service, where I held a number of executive roles. So that's my professional background. I am also the mother of two very strong, lively girls who I raised together with my husband in South Australia.
Now, on Instagram, you stated that your mission is to empower successful professional women who are ready to start a family to create their ideal professional and personal future. How did you become interested in preconception career planning?
Yeah, it's a really good question. Okay, so I really became interested in preconception planning after reflecting on my own experience. And I had a really difficult return to work experience. And while I was able to make it through successfully, I started asking around and realized that it was a really common experience for women. And I started to realize that a lot of the support and resources that were being offered to women were really at the point where we were already at quite a vulnerable stage in our career. And it made me reflect and realize that there were so many questions that I could have asked even before falling pregnant with my first daughter that I didn't ask. And I really wanted to, I guess, change that conversation, because even with the background that I had and the qualifications and the skill set that I had, I was completely blindsided by my own return to work experience. So I felt as though I needed to change that conversation, and that's really why I started my Instagram account, because I wanted to help women really start to think about what they could do better to put themselves in a better position.
And that's such a common thing that I hear about preconception planning, is that oftentimes women don't realize what they should have done before pregnancy until after they've had their first pregnancy. And so our mission at Preconception is really to change that conversation and the awareness surrounding the preconception period, so that first time, you know, soon to be moms can understand what they can do before pregnancy, I guess, to get themselves in a place in their lives, both mentally and physically and career-wise, where they feel like they're actually ready to become a mother and where they have the support in place to do so.
I think that's exactly right. And I think you and I share a really similar philosophy there about trying to prepare women as best as we can before they embark on such a huge transition in their lives. And I think there's a lot of narrative now with social media around preparing women for that postpartum period in the physical sense, but there needs to be a lot more in terms of preparing them for career preparation and a number of other things, which I know your podcast has covered, like finances, insurance, and all of those sorts of things. But I think it's about looking at it as you as an individual rather than just parts of what you require.
Absolutely. And now you're located in Australia, and obviously we're in the US, but this is an issue that's really pervasive throughout the world. On Instagram, you quoted a study that shows that 66% of women think that pregnancy puts their career at risk. That's a huge number. I mean, the fact that two-thirds of women think that becoming pregnant in 2020 will put their career at risk is astonishing to me. And I think it really speaks to the number of women who leave the workforce partially involuntarily after they have children. And so what would you say are some challenges that mothers face in the workforce today?
Yeah, I think even though I'm based in Australia, I've been contacted by quite a few American women since starting my Instagram account. And it's insane to me that the challenges that we face here in Australia are still very similar to what you guys face in America. And like you said, it's really, I think, still a global issue. But in terms of challenges that mothers face in the workforce, I think probably the biggest challenge is that the workforce is very much, or the way we work is very much based around traditional gender stereotypes and how they should be performed at work and at home. And as a result of that, I think that women who are mothers are still very much seen as outside of what is normal. And then I guess solutions are then trying to be tacked on to make it a little bit more normal for a mother to be working. So I think it's a very framework of how our workforce is set up that makes it incredibly difficult for working mothers. And I think a lot of the time as women, you'll see success as long as you're able to work in a way that I guess men are able to work, or women, you know, without children, because you're able to put in a certain way of working, I guess. So, yeah, the first point, I think, is very much that the way that the workforce is currently structured doesn't suit mothers.
Do you think that working mothers are undervalued in the workplace?
Yeah, I do. I think we don't see the perspective, the experience, the qualifications that women can bring. I think a lot of the time working mothers are seen as a bit of a nuisance, because either they might need to be primary caregivers, or they are going to make requests that are outside of what's considered normal, you know, when needing flexible working opportunities. Or they're not going to be maybe available within a 9-to-5 bandwidth. So I definitely do think that they're undervalued, and I think the conversation needs to change from what they're requesting to what they're able to offer, because we're losing so much talent and skill and experience out of the workforce because it's not adapting, I think, quickly enough to allow working mothers to really have a place there.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, despite the fact that we're in a global pandemic right now, I think that there may be some progression in this scenario, or I'm hopeful that there will be some in this scenario moving forward, because I think that quarantine and whatnot has really demonstrated how much working mothers and fathers, but as you stated, gender roles still very much persist both in the family and the workplace. And so I think that it's specifically been very obvious that women are carrying a really large burden in both their careers and their family lives, given the fact that a lot of women now are trying to work from home and, you know, homeschool their children or care for their children because they're not able to go back to school, at least in the US. And so I'm hopeful that this may have changed things, where we are no longer have this concept that you have to be at the office 9 to 5 to be a productive employee. You know, you can take time off in the morning or the middle of the afternoon, and you can still, you know, you're still a responsible human and can get your work done, assuming that it's a reasonable workload to begin with.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. And I'm very hopeful, like you, that the way the pandemic has forced employers or organizations to work really does shine a light on the way that we can work in the future. And hopefully that really does improve the experience for working mothers.
Absolutely. And so what questions do you think that women should be asking themselves when they're planning their careers and they know that they do want a family at some point in the future?
Yeah. So I really am a huge advocate for starting with a really simple question, which is, what do I want? I think a lot of the time, you know, we're sort of on autopilot. So I think by really clearly expressing what you want in your personal life and what you want in your professional life, and how you want the future to look is a really great place to start. I think once you've answered that, it's useful to start to look at what your organization offers, you know, in terms of any sorts of entitlements for when you do start to transition into that phase. Or any policies that they have in place around maternity leave, sick leave, or returning to work. And also looking future-wise, anything that they're doing to include working mothers or develop them, so that you know future-wise there's very much a place for you when you do make that transition into motherhood. I think then it's really crucial to ask yourself, you know, who do I know in my workplace or in my profession who has been through this, who has children, and who's also managing the sort of career that I want, and how can I learn from their experience? And also, you know, asking yourself, what has their experience been like? So I guess being really observant of how leaders in organizations are treating women who are transitioning into motherhood is a really important one, because even if your policies and procedures and everything like that within the organization are really supportive of working mothers, often a lot is actually said in how those are then carried out. And I also then think once you've sort of looked at all of that, it's really important then to do a mini assessment around whether the workplace that you're in aligns with the future that you want to create. So those would sort of be the sorts of questions I'd really be delving deep into in the preconception period.
That's such a good point about asking yourself what you actually want, because I think that often we're just kind of on autopilot and in this like go, go, go mentality. And I actually wonder how often we sit down and think like, what do I actually want from my life? Like, what do I want from my career? What do I want from my family life? What do I want from myself and my personal life? Like, how often do we actually stop and think about that or write it down, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's such a good point to actually think that instead of just kind of going with the social norm of, you know, going to college and getting married and then having a kid and building a career. And, you know, that's great for a lot of people. But if that's not what you want and yet you're kind of working towards those different things, it's really a good time to stop and think, like, do I enjoy what I'm doing? You know, do I enjoy where I'm working? Like mm-hmm. you mentioned, like, is this a workplace that supports women? If it's not, and you know that you, you know, want to have a family, especially, like, is that somewhere that you want to dedicate your time and talents to?
Exactly. And it also then enables you to start to have some really good conversations once you're clear about what you want, you know, with your, specifically with your partner, around saying, well, hey, I'm really clear on this and this is what I will need moving forward. How do we make this work? What does this look like for us? And I think, you know, we would all be in a much better position if we started to ask those questions and stopped worrying about what any other social norm was out there and just started living lives that we, you know, had decided for ourselves.
Yeah, that's really such a great point. And speaking of partners, how do you think that men and women differ when it comes to planning their careers for a family?
Yeah, I mean, I think I think about that question in terms of how my husband and I prepared for it. And I guess the impact on each of our careers. And my husband, the impact on his career was, I think, really quite temporary in the way we initially started things. And for me, it was completely life altering, you know, becoming a mother. And so, I think there's a huge difference. And a lot of it comes down to what's expected of us in each of those roles. But for women, I think it completely changes, careers and how they then manage it all. Whereas for men, it often is quite a temporary state, and a lot of the time, there's been quite a few studies that show that men become fathers, it actually is better for them in their careers because they're seen as more stable and reliable employees. Whereas for women, it's the opposite. So I think it is very different for men and women. But I mean, also, you know, the flip side of that is that for men, again, it's looking at them in that very much traditional gender stereotype of the breadwinner, and it doesn't really allow them to look much at their own personal potential, you know, in fatherhood. So I think that's probably something that needs to be challenged and explored as well.
That's such a good point. And I've read those studies before, and I think it's astonishing how, yeah, it helps men to have families and it hurts women. Like, how shocking. Yeah. I don't know if there's a better example of kind of the paternalistic model of career development that we still have in much of the world than that. I mean, that really speaks volumes.
Yeah. Doesn't it?
So while we're on the topic of kind of partners and men and women in the careers, what conversations would you say that partners should have when making decisions about starting a family and both, you know, balancing careers?
Yeah, so I think it's coming back to, you know, really talking to your partner about what you want to achieve personally and professionally. And then also starting to get a really clear idea of what your partner wants and how they envisage the future, because you're able to, at that preconception period, have a really clear conversation around where some of those tensions might exist. Because if you each believe that, you know, you're going to both have these huge careers that may be quite demanding with hours on workloads, then it's a really good opportunity to start to think about how family life is going to work and who is going to be taking on each of those, you know, responsibilities, so that you're each able to reach your potential. Because I think without having that conversation, a lot of the time we would just default to performing those traditional gender roles because that's what we've seen displayed. So it's really important, I think, to understand what you each want to achieve. I also think a really great conversation to have is just reflecting on how you were each brought up, because I really believe that subconsciously that influences what our future expectations are of each other. And so getting really clear on how that may impact what the future looks like is a really important conversation as well. And then I think a lot of the time it often falls to women to explore how they might manage career and motherhood and look at flexible working opportunities or part-time hours. But also that's an option that's available to your partner. So getting your partner to do the exact same investigation that you're doing in terms of your organization and finding out whether or not they've got a workplace that's friendly for fathers, and whether they have paternity leave entitlements and all those sorts of things. So each of you doing a really thorough investigation, I guess, of what's available to you and what may work. And I also think that both of you learning about the experiences of other people who have been through what you plan to go through is really vital, because it then opens up conversations as to how you might want things to look and what options you want to explore. So I really think that partners need to take a more active role in how you're going to combine family life and professional life, rather than just sort of leaving it to, I guess, the woman to decide, or the mother to decide what that all looks like. So I really think by having those sorts of deeper conversations, you're then able to be really clear in what your vision is for your family. And that way, when you do fall pregnant and have a baby, you sort of each know what the framework was that you agreed to, and how you're going to, I guess, empower each other to reach your potential.
Do you think that there's anything specific that partners who might be listening to this podcast could do to assist women in planning for both a successful career and being a mother?
Yeah, I think specifically it's not closing off any options. So whether it's for them to be, you know, a primary caregiver, or whether they're going to take a certain amount of leave to support you know, a woman in her career. I think it's being open and not being closed to, I guess, whatever solution is going to work best in your specific family.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a really great point. And I think that the first place to start with that is that conversation that you mentioned. But for anyone who maybe didn't have that conversation before pregnancy and is now pregnant or a mother already, or planning another child, you know, to have another child, I think that, you know, having partners do specific things, or like you said, just not closing off the idea that, like, a father can also stay at home. You know, it doesn't have to always be the mother, and a father can also take off time when the child's sick. It's not always the mother that has to do that, is a really important point for men to hear.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think as well, it's really important for them to have that, you know, to be empowered to be fathers and to have that time, and not feeling as though that it's not okay to take that time, or to request a flexible working week as well. I think it really just depends on your own personal situation and what you each want to achieve.
Absolutely. And I also think that when men specifically stand up in the workplace for flexible work arrangements, it also empowers not only other men in the workplace, but it empowers women as well. Because if a man stands up and there's, you know, for instance, the CEO of a company is willing to say, I'm going to take, you know, X amount of time when my wife has a baby, I think that gives everyone else permission to do the same. Because as you mentioned, despite there being policies in some, you know, companies that allow for paternity leave, if no one's actually taking it, then it leaves this kind of unspoken rule that, well, it's there, but you're going to be looked differently if you take it, you know, if you actually take advantage of that.
Absolutely. And I think as well, even, you know, if you're not a father yet, I think, you know, the more that you can support women who are returning to work through maternity leave, through having conversations with them, really being inclusive, that also is a huge, huge support, and making sure, I guess, that they're really heard, because that return is an incredibly vulnerable time. So the more that men can really support women through the beginning to the end of that transition, I think it's, you know, putting them in a much better position.
That's a really great point. And there certainly is something a little bit different, it seems, when men stand up for women than when women are standing up for women.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think that that's true. And the more that we can, I guess, all start to get on the same page around that, I think women will start to professionally reach their potential, and men will start to feel that it's okay to, you know, reach their personal potential. So I think it's about coming to a neutral ground where, you know, it's really then just about focusing on what's going to work best for you and your partner.
Absolutely. Now, what are some things that women can do during the preconception period to set their careers up for success once they do become pregnant and become a mother?
I think one of the best things you can do in the preconception period to set your career up for success is to really focus on building authentic and genuine connections inside your organization and also within your industry. I am a huge believer that you never know when you might need to call on you know, a person who you have a really great relationship with, and particularly when it's during a transition period, to either support you or to make you aware of other opportunities. And so really focusing on making sure that you have a strong, genuine network is really important. I also think in that preconception period, it's crucial to consider succession planning, particularly where you hold leadership roles within your organisation, and really playing an active role in exploring options for your absence when you do decide to take maternity leave. So looking at who may have the skills to be able to perform your role, how you might be able to start to train them at an early stage, and then really looking at how you can get consistent in your communication for your patients, clients, or whoever it is that you serve, so that they know that there's going to be that consistent line, because that's really crucial, I think, as well. I also think in the preconception period, once you've understood what it is that you want and how your future looks like, really setting up some clear boundaries around how you're going to work as early as possible will then just allow you to then make a much smoother transition into motherhood. So I think those things really start to set you up for success when you do eventually fall pregnant and have a baby.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think setting yourself up at work for the life that you want is probably really helpful in the preconception period as well, because if you, you know, imagine yourself having a flexible work arrangement and then you start actually acting on that and you meet resistance, that can tell you a lot about the way that your employer will probably act once you actually become pregnant and, you know, have a child. And that may make you decide to, in some scenarios, you know, leave the organization or, like you said, kind of network to find other opportunities that might be a better fit.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think as well, it's then saying, well, this is the way it's always been. This is the way it's always worked, and there's no resistance to it, because they know, your employer knows, yeah, it has worked and she's been able to deliver results and, you know, achieve what the goals were that we set within that, you know, if you wanted flexible working, using that example. So it's a much easier conversation when you do return to work, because it's the way that you always worked, and for your clients and patients or whoever it is to adjust to that way of working as well.
That's such a great point. So if there's a woman who is planning to become pregnant in the near future and wants to bring up this conversation of whatever it may be, you know, flexible work arrangements, differing hours, etc., how do you think that she could bring up that conversation with her employer?
Yeah, I think this is a tricky one, because I'm a huge advocate for having these discussions in the workplace as early as possible. And the difficulty is that, you know, you're marrying that against the very real, or the reality that there is still discrimination in the workplace. And often, unfortunately, it is quite subtle and difficult to call out. So I think the approaching your employer with a conversation around pregnancy planning really depends on a number of factors as to whether it's in your best interests to do so. So I really think you need to consider the relationship with your employer, the culture within your workplace and profession, and whether there is a special need, I guess, to share this information with your employer. For example, if you, you know, need some time off or that sort of thing. So I think if you decide that that's the right way to go, I think then it's really about considering, implementing things at an early stage around, making those requests for flexible work in the preconception period, because at that point in time, you're not pregnant and there's not a need to disclose it at that point.
Yeah, that's a great point. So maybe not necessarily having to go to them and, you know, explain what your plans are in relation to pregnancy, but just going to them with the request that you have in a completely like unrelated conversation.
Yeah, I think so. Unless you have the relationship with your employer where, you know, it is built, you do trust them to do the right thing. In terms of disclosing that information, because otherwise I think that you could potentially be setting yourself up for, I guess, sharing too early and then it risking or causing any sort of damage to your career.
Which is so sad that we have to think about that, but you're totally correct.
Yeah, it's a really unfortunate reality, isn't it? Something that we have to change, but I think it's looking at what's actually happening in the workplace at the moment and not wanting any woman to risk a career that she's worked so hard for at too early a point.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Now, one benefit that I can think of specifically of having these conversations with your employer beforehand, again, if you feel comfortable with that, is that for women who go through fertility treatments, for instance, they often have to have, you know, appointments every day, every other day, often early in the morning or in the afternoon, multiple times, you know, during a week. Yeah. And that can be really challenging with any kind of a schedule that someone has, specifically if you're trying to keep it a secret or you don't feel like you can share that information with your employer. And so I think it could be really helpful, you know, for people who feel comfortable sharing that information beforehand, because if you end up in a scenario where you're doing that, you may find that you actually have a lot of support from your employer and your coworkers, and you don't have to feel this like sense of, you know, needing to schedule these appointments at all these random times, but then also trying to like hide it and cover it up, because that can get really difficult. I've definitely had patients who are trying to find excuses, but it's really difficult to find excuses, you know, when you're on your fourth day at the clinic in a row.
Yes. Oh, I think that's so true. And I think that's, you know, looking at when you have a special need to share that information. And you know, I guess being a former litigator, I always will look at the worst case scenario and, you know, be risk adverse around what I recommend. But I definitely think, you know, in that situation, there's probably a special need in terms of sharing that information with your employer. And, you know, I definitely think it then probably sets you up for more success, because then you're not having to explain away absences and sort of be seen as unreliable in that sense. They're then provided, I guess, with that missing piece of information to really help your relationship moving forward.
Absolutely. That's so true. So if someone is looking to, let's say, change jobs before they become pregnant, what questions do you think they should ask a new company to determine if they are supportive of working mothers?
Yeah, I think that's a really great question. I think it's so important to research that employer. We've got so much information available to us, you know, online, and to really do a thorough investigation and assessment as to whether they're, you know, a great place to work as a working mother. I also think if you can find someone who works with the potential employer that you're looking at and find a way to speak to them, is also a fantastic approach, because you're probably going to get a much more real sense of how, in practice, I guess, they're operating. And I think then once you're actually with the employer, a great question to ask is asking about the teams and, you know, the sorts of people that work within the company, to try and get an understanding of whether it's quite common for parents or working parents to be in there, and asking about whether there are flexible working opportunities as well. I then think, you know, when you're offered the position, you can then start to look through, you know, more about their policies around supporting working mothers, maternity leave policies and all of that sort of thing as well. It's really crucial at that point to make sure that you're making a really informed decision.
Absolutely. And you quoted a study online that showed that 49% of women reported experiencing discrimination at some point during their pregnancy, during parental leave, or on return to work, which again is a really high number. Almost half of women reported experiencing discrimination. And as you mentioned, it's not always really easy to prove that. It can be really subtle discrimination that women experience. And so what should women do if they are experiencing discrimination due to their reproductive plans or their, you know, a new pregnancy or maybe a new child?
Yeah. Firstly, I was just going to come back to the point that you just made about subtle discrimination. I think that a lot of the legislation and fixes that were introduced, and in Australia it was in the 80s, and a lot of that was designed to really limit overt discrimination. And now it's moved to a point in the workplace where it is, like you said, subtle. And it's actually even, I think, sophisticated in a way, in that employers will not say to women who are mothers, oh, you know, you didn't get the job because you're a mother. You'll maybe be told you don't get the job because you weren't the best fit, or using, you know, restructures as a way to get women out of the workforce who are mothers, because it's just too difficult to think about, you know, a way to incorporate them. And saying, you know, they're actually like excess to our needs. So I think the way that discrimination is handled is really tricky. So if you are experiencing the subtle nature of discrimination, I think it's important to create a paper trail. And I guess what I mean by that is to take notes about what was said, what was done, and start to keep your own record. And if it got to a point where you still feel like something further needs to happen, a lot of companies will have an informal dispute resolution process. And I always recommend in the first instance that it's a really good idea to sit down and try and resolve it informally, by speaking with your manager or your human resources section. And you're really trying to, I guess, mitigate any risk that it needs to go, that, you know, you're going to need to, it can get resolved, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. And then if it still isn't resolved, it's when, again, most companies will have it escalated to a formal complaint process. And if that's still not something that you feel has been resolved, you know, in different jurisdictions you'll have like an Equal Opportunity Commission, or, you know, who has the power to investigate those complaints of discrimination in the workplace. So that would sort of be your last resort.
Yeah, and that's such a good point. And I also think that it speaks to the importance of really looking at how other women, specifically working mothers in your organization, are treated, because yeah. The last thing that anyone wants to do is be a new mother in the postpartum period with a newborn, then having to go through these, you know, resolution processes either in your company or, you know, worse yet, with a lawyer or something like that.
Yeah.
That's just a scenario that no one wants to be in. And so if you can at least have an idea that that might be a risk based on what you see happening with other women, you can make an informed decision of whether to stay with that employer or not before pregnancy. And one thing that we didn't really get into, but that I think is important, especially in the United States, is that oftentimes maternity benefits regarding paid parental leave or even health insurance don't start for several months after someone starts a job. And so yes. The importance of planning for this in the preconception period also comes down to you need to make a decision if you are going to leave your employer sooner rather than later so that you're not delaying pregnancy because you might not have access to insurance or you're not going to be eligible for paid maternity leave, you know, because you're a new employee or something like that.
Yes, absolutely. I think it's coming back to really working out what you want and then making sure that you're making great decisions around that, and absolutely making a move as soon as you know that your employer that you're with no longer aligns with what you want to create in the future. You then really are only setting yourself up for success if you make that move early enough, because then all your entitlements then do kick in.
Absolutely. So these can be really difficult conversations for women to have, both with themselves, with their partners, and definitely with employers. Do you have any advice on how women can stay positive and feel empowered when they are having these conversations?
Yeah, I think for me, it's finding your support network. So coming back to really making sure that you're surrounding yourself with people who support you as a person and what you want personally and professionally, and I guess relying on them to support you and to help you stay positive and I guess supported throughout that whole process. I'm not finding a better word there. And, you know, it's part of the reason as well why I really created my account on Instagram, was because a lot of the resources that were available were really focused at women as employees, but not as people. And I think, you know, when you've got so many different things happening and so many things you want to achieve, it's really important to find places that you are supported, and that's, you know, part of the reason why I created the Pregnant Executive, is to find, to create a community for women to, I guess, feel empowered and to feel positive as they're going through what often is quite a vulnerable time.
Yeah, and I think also remembering that you are an asset and you are an individual that has specific things that you can offer your employer is important to keep in mind, because oftentimes I think that we come at this from a, like, I'm asking a favor perspective, and we forget that we're a valuable asset to our company and our employer. And at the end of the day, they'll be the ones who are losing out if we have to leave the workforce or, you know, we switch jobs. You know, anyone who's worked in administration knows that it's very expensive to replace an employee once someone leaves. And so there's definitely a negotiating strength that you have being a current employee, especially one who's performing really well in the workplace when you do have these conversations. And so I think coming from an empowered place like that, instead of feeling like you are asking for a favor, could be helpful as well.
Absolutely. And yeah, not feeling as though what you're asking for is too much, or you can't do that because, you know, you haven't been there for X number of years, or no one else has made that request before you, and so it's not something that's done or accepted, is, yeah, absolutely moving away from that and focusing on who you are and what you have to offer that organization is absolutely a fantastic starting point.
As we get to the end of the podcast, is there anything else that you'd like to share with our listeners?
I just want to share that you're not alone. And I think at a lot of the time, it feels like a really incredibly vulnerable position that you're in, particularly when you first return to work and start to, you know, feel the tensions arise around being a good mother and also having a successful career and feeling like you can't do it all. But there are a lot of proactive steps that you can take, you know, at each stage of that transition to really help you feel supported, empowered and successful as you make that transition into motherhood. So definitely just not to feel alone, and that there are resources out there that can support you.
That's excellent advice. And there are other women who have certainly gone through the same thing that you're going through. And as you mentioned, if you can identify them, especially beforehand, then that may be someone that you can, you know, lean on in your organization to support you.
Exactly. And as well, I think the women who have been through it and when they're moving into positions of leadership are much more encouraging when they're seeing other women going through it as well and are able to provide you a world of support too. So I think, yeah, that's definitely a great resource that you should definitely tap into as well.
Corinna, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. This is such an important conversation that we certainly don't have enough. And you really share some really important information online that I think our listeners can really find valuable. So how can they find you?
Yes. So I am on Instagram at the_pregnant_executive. And that's where you're able to reach me.
Okay, perfect. And we'll link that in the show notes today as well for anyone who would like to follow Corinna on her The Pregnant Executive Instagram account. So thank you again so much for joining us. It's been a delight to talk with you, and I really appreciate you taking the time to share your expertise and this information with our listeners.
No, you're so welcome. Thank you so much for having me, Christy. I really enjoyed it.
The information provided in the Preconception podcast is for educational purposes only and should not be interpreted as medical advice. Please speak with your healthcare provider to learn more about your health before pregnancy.